Welcome to Coffee with Catholic Workers, a podcast from and about folks involved in the Catholic worker movement. I'm Theo.
And I'm Lydia. We've both been active in the Catholic worker for about the past decade, and we're excited to bring to you some of our favorite people from the movement.
Today we talk to D.L. Mayfield, the author of Unruly Saint, Dorothy Day's Radical Vision and Its Challenge for Our Times, a new book about Dorothy Day. D.L. terms this book her passion project. We'll link to her website in the episode notes for those who are interested in purchasing it or exploring any of her other writing. Let's get to it.
So today on our episode, we have D.L. Mayfield, who recently wrote a new book about Dorothy Day. And so I'm wondering, could you share a little bit about your book? Maybe give us a brief synopsis, actually, of Dorothy's life for those who maybe are less familiar. And then what was it that sort of inspired you or drew you to begin thinking about writing your book?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And it's really hard to sum up Dorothy Day's life, which is why she's a wonderful person to think about and spend time thinking about, because she's very complex. And, you know, I think we just need to kind of hold that in our minds, you know, as we converse about her. And writing a book about her was sort of like a dream come true for me. It was a true passion project because, you know, nobody was clamoring for another book about Dorothy, because there's been some great, you know, biographies written about her that do show the totality of her life. And also for the perspective of her family. Like I can't say enough good things about Kate Hennessy's book. I think getting Dorothy's family's perspective on her is so important and really needs to be at the forefront. But for me, I'll just say my book, Unruly Saint, I really anchored the book in Dorothy Day in 1933 in New York City, you know, in the throes of the Great Depression. And so for me, it was really important to just have some anchors. I think if you are like, well, I don't know if both of you guys are involved in like Facebook groups, right, of Catholic worker types or social justice types or anybody, if you're seeing images of Dorothy, usually they're of an older Dorothy with white hair, you know, usually some kind of very pious phrase attributed to her. And it's just a lot of like intense old lady saint vibes, which is fine. That is definitely a part of her. Okay. And that is a part of her life and her legacy. But when I read The Long Loneliness, you know, she wasn't an old woman when she wrote her autobiography that became a bestseller. She was like similar to me, right? She was middle-aged, white, from sort of a lower middle-class family, just kind of struggling through what it means to be a person of faith in such unequal and unjust times, right? And so even going back further than that, I started just kind of obsessively reading her diaries, and then comparing and contrasting that with The Long Loneliness. This is just like my personal obsession. Like, where are they different? Where are they the same? Like, how does her writing change? How does, what parts of herself did she hide, you know, in The Long Loneliness? And what was she more honest about in her diaries? And that's really what led me to write this book, because I was just doing all this for my own personal, you know, whatever. And my agent was like, do you have another book idea? I was like, I'm up to my neck in Dorothy Day diaries. Like, if you're curious about that. And they were like, well, we're not really, but they went ahead and let me publish a book on it anyway. So yeah, I focus on Dorothy Day in 1933. She had been, sorry, this is really long-winded, but she had sort of, you know, been a sort of leftist radical person. She was highly intelligent, right? And then she went, she experienced like so many incredibly historic events as a young person. So like, you know, she lived through World War One and sort of this great period of disillusionment in the United States before World War One, right? Everybody was like, we're entering a new era of mankind. Like, we're never gonna hurt each other again. And everybody's becoming so liberated. And there's like this huge myth of progress, like that, you know, people were touting. And then World War One happened and everybody just got decimated, right? There's so much mass death in World War One, and so little actually changed, like geopolitically anything, right? And so there's that grappling. And then there was, you know, the influenza of 1918. Dorothy was actually became a nurse and was with people as they died from this horrific pandemic, which obviously, you know, has some ramifications for us today in a COVID world. And then we have the Great Depression. And Dorothy had always been sort of really drawn to leftist people who were obsessed with the plight of the worker. And so that's who she hung around with. That's who she was reading. And then she ended up becoming a Catholic. And it's very interesting how she became a Catholic. And she writes about this a ton. I'm not going to get into all that here. But for the first 5 years of her being a Catholic, she was just like a Catholic in her mind, right? She read all these Catholic writers and was like, I'm friends with them. The Catholic Church is the church of the poor around the world. And people are telling me the Catholic Church is the one true church. So if I'm going to be a Christian, and she definitely had this, felt this call towards God and had her whole life, she's like, then I'm going to join the one true church in the church of the poor around the world. But she didn't actually have a lot of relationships with Catholics. And so for 5 years, she was sort of like, what does this even mean? And then, you know, the Great Depression really brought visible poverty to the forefront, and just the plight of people asking for basic human rights and basic dignity in the United States. And she was like, none of the Catholics priests like have anything to say about any of this. And in fact, they're like demeaning these people who are begging for rights. And she went and covered a hunger march to Washington, D.C. in 1932. And she was covering it for a Catholic newspaper. And as she was doing that, she just thought, what am I doing here? Why am I writing about this for a Catholic newspaper? Like, if Jesus was here, Jesus would be marching with these people. He would be a low skilled, low wage earning worker, and he would be marching with them. And she was just like, I can't do this anymore. I don't know what to do. And so she went and she prayed, to a shrine of Mary and asked God to help her. And then she went back home to New York, and there was a guy named Peter Morin literally on her doorstep saying, I've been looking for you. I've read some of your writings, and I have a 3-part plan to change the world. Do you want to hear it? And like, that's kind of where my book is situated. That person, of course, is Peter Morin. He did have this encyclopedic knowledge of Catholic social history and really ignited a spark within Dorothy to say, oh, like, there's some historic religious roots to the kind of work I'm interested in, the kind of society I would like to live in versus the one I actually do. And so her and Peter kind of embarked on the Catholic worker experiment, which started with a newspaper that Dorothy put out once a month, an 8-page newspaper called The Catholic Worker. So my book is really about the newspaper. I'm obsessed with the newspaper. I'm obsessed with the early issues, Dorothy as a writer. And the funny thing that happened to me while writing this book was I just fell totally in love with Peter Morin. And, you know, I hope we continue to talk about him more, because he was such a fascinating figure. Sorry that was so long.
I mean, that actually seemed incredibly concise when talking about Dorothy. I feel like she's somebody who we could always talk about kind of forever. I'm curious of what it was like for you as you're writing about Dorothy's life and diving into all of her writings. What was that for you in your outlook of the world, or in how you understand sort of the plight of the poor or the systems around us?
Yeah, I mean, I've been reading Dorothy for a while, but my background is coming from white evangelicalism. My dad is a pastor. You know, I grew up in the western part of the United States. I was homeschooled. You know, I was basically a product, I would say now, of like targeted religious childhood indoctrination into a white nationalistic program. I don't know how else to put it at this point. And so I identify with Dorothy in that I did have a deep desire and longing for God, and I was just absolutely gobsmacked by the reality of inequality and injustice in the United States. And I came to that by living in low-income communities in Portland and working with refugees. And so just really opened my eyes to two realities. And one was that my religion was only good news for people who are exactly like me. And the second was that my city and my state and my country also were only good news for people just like me. And so I felt very alone in those realizations because I was so sheltered and went, I was going to a Bible college, you know, full of white evangelicals, and they were just like, the world is fucking awesome. Like, you know, of course people need to become Christians, but like, things are okay. Like, we need to keep it the same. And I was inwardly being like, do you know how many families like don't have enough money to pay rent? Like, what do you mean America's amazing? Like, what do you mean we need to all go be missionaries in a foreign country? Like, there is shit going down here. Like, what's going on? And so I found Dorothy's writing and you know, specifically The Long Loneliness during that time. And the title was so apt. I was so horrifically lonely within white evangelicalism. And now I realize that's because just the cognitive dissonance of white evangelicalism is huge. And I was being gaslit at all times, you know, like, and so Dorothy, I was like, here's a person who is obsessed with God and is also obsessed with inequality. And it did make me feel better. Now, here's something tricky. I wonder if we want to get into this topic. One thing that has happened for me is with writing this book about Dorothy, I really wrote it for myself. I'm happy to have it published, happy to have more people know about her, all that. But I was really working through some of my own stuff. And I've idolized Dorothy for like 15, 20 years now and really got into reading all of her work over and over again in the past 5 years. And, you know, sometimes people will say to me, oh, I can't wait to read your book. I just love Dorothy Day. And, you know, Dorothy just makes me know, like, I can stay a Christian or I can stay a Catholic or I can stay in the church. Like, when all else fails, when I'm just so tired and I'm just so sick of everything, I'm like, Dorothy Day stayed a Catholic. I can do it too. And, you know, multiple people have told me that since my book was published. And I got to be honest and say, like, my heart sinks every time that happens. So I just wondered if either of you two wanted to kind of comment on that, because when it comes to like religious historical figures, right, there's on one hand, there's their actual life, the complexities of that human. And then there's sort of this like myth making machine, right? And especially with Dorothy, it's ramped up because she is in the canonization process. And the myth serves to help the institution. Like, that's it. That is it. And so I've already seen it firsthand, people being like, oh, there's so many things about the Catholic Church that give me pause, but Dorothy did it. Like, I can stay too. And I'm just sort of like, no, now you're using Dorothy to not listen to yourself. Like, this is not good. Like, this is, and I've been really surprised by how many people have told me that and how intensely negatively I've responded to that. So I'm curious if either of you guys have some thoughts on this sort of phenomenon.
Like the broad phenomena of maybe Dorothy is being used by the church to keep people Catholic who wouldn't necessarily otherwise want to hang out with the Catholics. Is that kind of what you're,
I mean, thinking? There's that element, but people are doing it to themselves too. There's an element of like self-policing that can happen within religious frameworks, right? You are taught to distrust yourself and be like, yeah, some of this corruption stuff really sucks, but this is the best way to be a person, right? This is the best way to be a human. And so we use people like Dorothy to be like, well, she stayed, therefore I should too. So I'm not even saying like it's a targeted thing by the Catholic Church, although I think there's that to it, but it's also like a social and even personal thing that I see happening with people. But maybe this is just me. Maybe you guys have not experienced this.
No, I think there's the risk of like intellectually using Dorothy to absolve other wrongs. I do want to be careful. So I am not Catholic. I actually come from an evangelical background myself. And I'm not Catholic. I speak about this as someone outside of the Catholic Church. And this is a very real debate within the Catholic worker, this idea of Dorothy for sainthood or not. And different Catholic workers feel very strongly about this, where both this idea of like, what good does it do to make Dorothy a saint? Sort of is there a this both internal push and external push to use Dorothy to kind of, in a weird sense, become like an evangelical Catholic, to like push this idea of Catholicism or absolve Catholicism by saying Dorothy was such an ardent and fervent Catholic, therefore we should all be too. I definitely see that tension running across different communities for sure.
I think one thing that a number of guests who've come on this show have said about the Catholic worker movement is that like it felt right to them. Like a literal experience of the Catholic worker, not necessarily talking about like reading about Dorothy Day. And just like, I think that a commitment to something that feels right to you is going to be a lot more serious and important. And so, yeah, if somebody is saying like, well, Dorothy had that commitment to the Catholic Church, among other things, right? Like, if you don't feel that same commitment, I don't know how healthy that's going to be or where it will get you.
Yeah.
I don't know. Does that make sense?
No, I think that's helpful to hear. And, you know, most of the people I'm writing to, and this is another piece of my book, right, is it is to people who are outside of the Catholic worker circles, the communities. And I wasn't really writing with Catholics in general in mind, just because I am, again, come from this Protestant evangelical background. And so I really wanted this book to be accessible to people who weren't familiar with Catholicism. And Dorothy, you know, I just think Dorothy's like such an amazing writer and doesn't get talked about enough as a journalist and a writer. She's stunning. And at the same time, like, she's so steeped in her place and her moment. Like, The Long Loneliness has so many names, so many historical people, so many books, so many things that were happening at that. And I like have to Google like a ton of those because I don't know 1920s, you know, like movers and shakers like I should. And so that's kind of also what I wanted to do in my book, is kind of making some inroads for people who aren't experts in 1920s and 30s history. Like, here's what was going on. Here's the things happening. But again, like in 2023, like, I just don't know how you can be a person of faith without experiencing like the anguish Dorothy felt at all times about being a religious person in this world. And I just think some of these images of her older and being venerated as a saint, like, they really erase this constant tension she was in with the failures of institutional Christianity. So I guess when I hear people use Dorothy as an example for why they want to stay in institutional Christianity, I'm like, oh, I think we're missing something. Like, I think we're missing a lot of what Dorothy was doing.
I think there's also this piece I really appreciate about an effort to make Dorothy more accessible, particularly outside of traditional Catholic circles, is that so many of Dorothy's ideas are very, very relevant today. Mm-hmm. And yet they're not always accessible for people simply because of the writing that they have, or the fact that outside of maybe a Catholic education, people won't encounter it. But as we look at sort of the time and place we're in currently, yeah, there is this piece of worker dissatisfaction, this like feeling that people will never be able to kind of rise from any station in life to have opportunity, this growing divide between rich and poor, these ideas of mutual aid, of decentralization. They're all things that are just so pertinent, but aren't easily accessed if we just mm-hmm. contain Dorothy to only a religious Catholic understanding. And then we lose some of the larger Dorothy didn't want to just change the Catholic Church or change Catholics. Dorothy had a wide vision that encompassed everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I'm assuming that you guys have seen an uptick in interest in the Catholic worker precisely because ideas like mutual aid are starting to get, you know, we're talking about it in a way that's new, right? I come from the evangelical framework, which is benevolent charity. And, you know, one of my favorite Dorothy quotes, right, is she says, charity is a word to choke on. Like, and I just was like, well, thank you. Thank you for, like, upending my entire framework. Like, I needed that. Like, I need someone to say that to me. And she did. And I think it's, I totally agree. As I was writing this book, I was like, I'm just blown away by just the historical parallels between the 1920s, 30s United States and today, in this period of deep economic turmoil, rising religious fascism, like, you know, pandemics. We're seeing it break down in real time, that, like, the people in charge do not have an ethic of the common good, right? They say they do, but they don't. And just like, wow, this was all happening back then. It's kind of horrifying, but also just kind of helpful for me to be like, oh, history is cyclical. And there have been these wonderful people who resisted in all these sorts of ways. And I think that's why, again, if people read my book, you know, they don't need to read it. I'm sure the people listening to this don't need to read my book. I just want more people to read her writings, right? And, like, that's really, like, what the goal is, to try and get people to read some of these radical thinkers and just know, like, yeah, some of them are people of faith, and that's really awesome and very surprising, just given the state of, you know, Christianity in the United States. It still shocks me, some of the things Dorothy wrote and said, and in a good way.
You know, when we've spoken in the past, I brought up, I really like the cover of your book. Can you tell us a little bit about it? Dorothy smoking a cigarette?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, Dorothy was a chain smoker, smoked a ton. And, like, if you read her diaries, letters, and even the long loneliness, you know, talks about constantly, but I couldn't find any pictures of Dorothy smoking, like, ever. And there's quite a few pictures of her, and, you know, there's the archives and stuff, so I had a really hard time tracking down a picture of her smoking. But it was kind of important to me because kind of going back to this, like, idea of commodifying religious historical figures, you know, if you look at most of the biographies of Dorothy, again, black and white image, intense looking Dorothy at a protest or praying somewhere, you know. And I was like, she was a living, breathing, middle-aged person who chain smoked, like, while being very Catholic. Like, I would like to put that on my cover and also maybe scare off people who were just looking for a book about how to be a better Catholic or whatever. And again, I'm not, like, denigrating those kinds of people, but I've written now 3 books in Christian publishing, and the majority of people who buy books in these circles are white women, and, like, white Christian women who have a vested interest in upholding the status quo. And so I was like, if we put a picture of Dorothy smoking, that's just going to weed some of them out, and I'll get less hate mail or whatever. And I originally had this artist, Ben Wildflower, draw a picture of Dorothy smoking, and he actually has it for sale now on his website, and it's beautiful. He did an older Dorothy who was smoking, which has a lot of personal significance for me, even though she did give up smoking for God in her 40s. But they ended up not liking that, the publisher, and so actually Kate Hennessy sent me a photo of Dorothy smoking, and she's wearing, like, a medallion of the Pope while smoking. It's, like, so good. And then my publisher, I don't have, like, control over it. They ended up, like, kind of stylizing it and making it more of a, like, a cartoon look. And they took off the medallion of the Pope, which I'm still upset about. But I do appreciate that it's very colorful. My image is very colorful because Dorothy didn't live her life in black and white. You know, even though it's, like, the majority of pictures we have of her, she was a real person. And she smoked a ton.
So you also kind of provocatively say, you know, Dorothy is a radical woman who's a menace to society. What led you to push that line?
Well, yeah, I just think, like, why am I writing a book about Dorothy? Like, why am I obsessed with her? And it's like, if we took what she had to say about labor, like, if we actually internalize that and we're like, the workers of this world, like, they uphold the fabric of our society and they hold so little, like, institutional power and will be exploited at every turn unless we fight claw, tooth, and nail, you know, for their rights. Again, going back to my own lived experience as a white woman raised Christian in the United States, it's like, if we can internalize the things Dorothy was saying, we would be screaming, we would be protesting, we would be, you know, like, resisting dehumanization and exploitation at every turn. And what's hard is, like, most of us don't want to do that, for one, because it's overwhelming, and for two, we have a vested interest in an unequal system if we're benefiting in that system. And so I think Dorothy is a great example of somebody who comes from that middle class white American background, who spent her entire life trying to say, like, this system isn't working, because it's not working for the least of these, you know, to use Christian language. And she found so much solace in the fact that Catholic social teaching and the scriptures backed her up on that, you know, on her hunch that if the very poorest of the poor were taken care of in your society, the rest of society would flourish. And she, you know, she believed that in her heart, and she saw that in Christian historic teaching. It was like, this is what I have to look forward to. And again, it sounds so pious and so Christian when I'm saying that out loud, but when you looked at the lived reality of implementing policies and ways of living that prioritize the most marginalized and oppressed, like, you're going to get into some fights real quick, right? in your city and all these things with your family, if they're still come from that sort of dominant culture background. So, I hope, I don't know what my hopes were, because I think so many of us are in this place. If we're not in a position where we can join a Catholic worker house, or we don't feel radical enough, or we feel totally trapped by these systems, like, you know, I'm a mom. I have two kids. When they were old enough to start going to public school, right? That's when you start to really assess just one of the institutional frameworks that are unequal and unjust, and places where privilege and resources are hoarded fiercely by my people, white ladies, right? We are the queens of resource hoarding when it comes to education, right? And just thinking, like, I can't take this down with my bare hands, but I can be aware, and I can say, this, if it's not working for, like, the poorest kids in my city, then it's not working. And you know what? If you ask that question in your city, you will probably come to the conclusion that public education is not working, because it's totally failing so many kids. And many people would argue, like, yeah, and that's on purpose, right? Which is a whole other conversation to have. But sorry, I feel like I'm just jabbering about this. I'm sure you guys have even better ideas on what that means, that Dorothy was a menace to society.
No, I think that that point actually about kids is something that was actually just mentioned by one of our previous guests, of this idea of, you know, once you have children and trying to, in his context, raise them in community, it's this piece of, it's kind of where the rubber meets the road in terms of values, of, like, do you actually believe these values strongly enough that you're not just going to live your life into them, but your kids as well. We've got a quote here from your book. So you write, she's become a trusted companion and a friend, as best writers can be. But more than that, Dorothy has become to me an unsettling force, a pebble in my show, a ripple in my pond. She's a stumbling block for those who want a happy life, free of responsibilities to their neighbor, to people who want to love Jesus without living like him. For me, she's been a wonderful and annoying saint. She certainly hasn't made my life any easier, and part of me knows she would be terribly pleased by this. Did you have something in particular in mind while you were writing that, of the ways that Dorothy has become a stumbling block for you?
Yeah, well, yes, I do. But I wonder if it's okay for me to be, like, really honest in this moment, in this podcast. I wrote the majority of the book in 2020, which was a really traumatizing year for me. Like, I mean, we had obviously COVID. We had the Black Lives Matter protests here in Portland. And so that was my first time, right? Like getting tear gassed by the police. And we had these like horrific wildfires, and it just felt like climate change was here. There's nothing I could do. We couldn't go outside like for 10 days. And, you know, the economy was tanking. I'm like totally immersed in Dorothy Day's life. Just, you know, my kids aren't going to school. I have to take care of them. Like all of my friends at that point, I live in a low income neighborhood. Like people were freaking out. How are they going to get money to feed their kids, to pay their rent, you know? And like, up until that point, Dorothy had just been sort of a similar figure as Jesus, if I'm being honest, which is like this unattainable person that you can try and be like somebody who is more like God than you, and that you can measure yourself against. And of course, you'll find yourself wanting, you know, and that'll give you encouragement to keep going and try harder and get more involved in injustice and fixing the problems of the world. And now this is me coming again from this evangelical mindset, right? And a huge part of that mindset is, and I think this is just directly related to whiteness, is if there's a problem, we can fix it. Like, even if we created the problem, like, like I'll just get really good at justice work and I'll fix it, you know, like I'll do it. And Dorothy really played that role in my life to sort of be someone to try and be like, so I could feel like a good person. And I don't want to like pathologize it too much. And I don't want to like, you know, this is just my personal experience. But now, after, this was terrible timing, right when the book was published on Dorothy in, you know, 2022, November, I was like, I am no longer a Christian. And does that make like my relationship with Dorothy, like, does it mean that it didn't mean anything? Does it mean that none of this means anything? But I don't really think that's true at all. I think that Dorothy was a really wonderful companion as I was drowning in the loneliness of the lived theological ethics of white evangelicalism, right? As I was coming to terms with the utter toxicity of like the reactionary religious movement I was born into. So Dorothy, I just can't thank her enough for her writings. But I am no longer interested in trying to be like Dorothy Day. I want to be myself. I don't want to be like Jesus either. Like Jesus was his own person. Like I want to be me. And I do think the more we know ourselves and our limitations and our interests and our passions, I think the movement will actually be better, right? Instead of having a bunch of people trying to live like somebody else for a few years and then burning out horribly. I mean, that's the pattern I've seen in every intentional community and every radical movement. It's like you might have one or two people, right, who do stick it out for the long haul, and that's awesome. But usually you find these people who go all in. 3 years, 5 years, 1 year. I did it for 14 years. And then they just burn out horribly because they had been trying to be like somebody else instead of being who they were. And so actually writing the book and centering Dorothy in like 1933 in her lived experience and what her daughter had to say about her was so helpful for me to being like that, yeah. Dorothy's a complicated person. I'm a complicated person, you know, like, and we live in the same country and there's some of these same themes and questions we have, but like no, I no longer believe it is healthy at all to try and be like another person, even if you admire them. I just think that does such a deep disservice to your own humanity. I'm sorry, that's awkward. That's not what I'm supposed to say, I know, about this book and about Dorothy Day, but I'm like, I don't want to be here anymore. And some of that, like, she was like a pebble in my shoe. It's like, yeah, some of that was helpful and some of that was not helpful, like, at all. So I don't quite know what to make of all that either. You know, it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, I feel like there's some of, like, the don't call me a saint is really in all this that you're saying, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you've had people talk about this saying of Dorothy's a lot already, but for me, I spent a lot of time thinking about that. And to me, it seems like Dorothy did want to be a saint and she did want to live like a saint. And yet she didn't want to be used by institutions, right, to baptize them of all their sins. But she definitely did, like, lived as if she was a saint, you know. And in my own weird ways, I tried to do that too. I mean, a lot of us in religious frameworks do this. And it is just fascinating. I mean, I started therapy last year. I've been in therapy for a year. And I'm just like, what if everybody who was obsessed with God and wanting to be good and wanting to help the world and help, what if we went to therapy? And what would that be like? I'm like, I don't know what like the Catholic worker communities are like, but in the intentional communities I've been a part of, nobody went to therapy. We joined intentional communities instead. And we worked out our existential angst and we all had religious OCD or moral scrupulosity. And because we were around other people who did, it was like, yeah, this is normal. If you look at Dorothy's diaries, if you look at her letters, she will say sometimes, I had an attack of the scruples, right? That's what all the old saints used to say. And I'm just like, yeah, that's mental illness. That is like a rumination loop thought that can be very harmful to yourself if you get stuck in those all the time. And so many of the saints, and not just in Catholicism, but like the people we uphold in evangelicalism, say missionaries or something like that, a lot of them have these ruminations and this, you know, almost obsessive compulsive internal compulsions, all this stuff. I'm just like, y'all, I just think more of us should be going to therapy. Like, it's just a little question I have these days. I don't know if you guys want to talk about that, if you don't want to.
I would guess that maybe 50% of people here at my community go to therapy or have gone to therapy. I am a therapist, so yeah, go to therapy.
I'm so happy to hear this. Oh, now I just want to pick your brain about all this stuff.
I'm only a therapist, not in the Catholic worker. I don't therapize people.
Good. Yeah.
Within the house.
Yeah.
Are there any to get kind of, we're getting to the end here. So I was wondering if there was any just like favorite fun fact or tidbit or anything you picked up about Dorothy when you're digging through all this stuff, getting ready for a book.
Yeah, it's funny, the things that stood out to me. And in the beginning, it was just all these little humanizing elements, right? Like when she first started the Catholic Worker newspaper and people just started showing up and they ended up having people sleep in their, you know, tenement apartment. You know, they had a cat named Social Justice. And for some reason that just like tickles me. And, you know, there's like a history of the black cat within like labor movements and socialist movements. And so, I don't know, I just spent a lot of time thinking about cats and workers' rights. It's just, I just like having these little things to hold on to say like, Dorothy was a lady who liked cats. Like, that's cool. Like, that's who I am. But the biggest thing for me from the book, and I kind of already mentioned it, right, was I sort of thought Dorothy was like gassing us all up, how she talked about Peter Morin all the time and him being the co-founder of the Catholic Worker movement. I was like, no, Dorothy, it's all you, babe. Like, you are the go-getter. You are the writer. You're all the... And the more I researched and read it, it became very clear to me that Peter Morin is an integral part. And it was his knowledge of Catholic social teaching, plus just history in general. And I think it's also his connection to Europe and his connection to literally being raised a peasant in France. Like, he just had so much wisdom and insight. And yet he appears to be such a weird person that nobody just knew what to do with him. And so Dorothy is like one of the few people who is sort of able to absorb his constant stream of propaganda, basically, that was coming out of his mouth, and turn it into this newspaper, right? And turn it into these values for starting like the Catholic worker farms. And so I felt totally in love with Peter Morin, and I was not expecting that. I am fascinated by him. I think I wish there was like 20 more books written about him, but there aren't. And so I was really sad at the lack of scholarship around Peter Morin. And of course I'd want more scholarship on Dorothy Day. And honestly, the Catholic worker movement in general deserves a lot more scholarship than it's gotten. And so those are some things I'm like, oh, I just hope there's somebody out there who's a weirdo like me and gets obsessed with Peter Morin and writes a more accessible look at his work. So yeah, that was like the most surprising thing to me. I'm just a huge Peter Morin fan.
We're hoping eventually to jump more into Peter Morin on some of our episodes and have Lincoln Rice get on here to talk maybe about Peter Morin a bit.
Yeah, Lincoln Rice was so helpful to me when I was writing this book. And I just got to say that the Catholic worker folks that I reached out to for help while writing this book were so incredibly gracious, so incredibly kind. They're all so freaking smart. It's just like there's a wealth of knowledge and wisdom and insight in the Catholic worker community, especially people who actually knew Dorothy. Like the fact that they would be on phone calls with me for hours, just like letting me ask them questions and processing things. And I was so grateful to sort of had like different varieties of folks who are really knowledgeable about Dorothy give insight into my project. And so I just can't say enough. I was really scared. I'm really scared about being an outsider and knowing that I'm an outsider. I'm not a Catholic. I've never lived in a Catholic worker house. But I've just been really blown away by how willing people were to share their insights. And they're people who have thought a lot about these things and Dorothy's life and, you know, things like Dorothy's sainthood. And so I'm just really grateful to everyone who really helped me out.
Well, we are really grateful to you for coming and talking to us on this episode. Are there any last things that you want to make sure you say about yourself or Dorothy or the book?
Okay, no, not about any of those things. But Theo, when we had a chat before, I remember telling you we were having a little chat about social media, you know, and I like social media, you know, I'm 38. I actually love TikTok and all these things. And we were talking a little bit about how there isn't like a huge online presence of Catholic workers, which is fascinating because like, again, Gen Z and millennials are very interested in a lot of the ideas I think that Catholic workers have. And so I'm sort of like, where are they? Where are all the Catholic workers? Like, why aren't they on social media? And of course, we know why. It's because there's a resistance to technology and social media and all this stuff. But this is my personal belief, and I just want to know if what you two have to say about this. After researching Peter Morin and Dorothy Day, I'm just like, are you kidding me? They would be 100% on TikTok. They would be tweeting out their thoughts. They would be so excited to have these avenues to agitate, to complain, to resist, to exhort, the clarification of thought. Like, I think Peter Morin would just like have a heyday with TikTok. But maybe I'm being weird here. I'm just curious what you guys think of this idea. I'm just like, they were not precious about it. I mean, the newspaper was the main way for them to do it. So that's what they did. If Dorothy had had access to Twitter, she would have used Twitter. Like, I just feel like that's a no brainer to me. But again, maybe I'm missing some things here.
Well, Theo and I are the moderators for a Facebook group for Catholic Worker Movement. As part of the effort to have some sort of Catholic worker presence on social media. Yeah, I think both of us would love for there to be a greater Catholic worker presence on social media avenues. I think some of the difficulty is there's not a central Catholic worker voice. And so I think people are sometimes hesitant to like put anything out. And the fact that people just aren't online a lot. It is interesting that did shift a little bit in the pandemic of more houses getting internet. And I specifically know a handful of houses, which after getting internet, they're like, it's kind of nice, in particular to stay connected with people, to be able to do more remote collaboration. I don't know though. I don't know if we're ever going to get a Catholic worker TikTok.
But I mean, again, maybe it's more like if you're somebody who has Catholic worker ethics and values, right? Recognizing like social media is a way to have the clarification of thought, have some of these conversations in the public and places like TikTok. I mean, these social media companies obviously have so many problems and so many ethical whatever. They are also absolutely places where people are getting access to information, resources, and community in a culture that desperately wants them to not have access to these ways of thinking, to new ways of building community. And so I'll just put out my little plug there for people listening. The world, you know, needs more visible representations of people saying, actually, capitalism really sucks. Like, you know, there's basic stuff doesn't always make it to people. And so there's ways to do that on social media, specifically, you know, ones that rely on the algorithm, like TikTok. Is very fascinating how people who have been marginalized and oppressed have found access to resources through those spaces. So I think Peter Morin would make some TikToks. And I just like thinking about that sometime. What would they be like? I'm not saying he would be popular. I'm saying he would utilize the avenues available to him to communicate his beliefs.
Definitely. I mean, he infamously like rented out theaters in New York that nobody showed up to and stuff like that.
Yes.
Some people say the Easy Essays are kind of like a Twitter thread or something like that already.
They 100% read like, or, you know, I guess maybe this is more like a white female thing, but like there's a lot of this like poetry that on Instagram, you know, like lots of white space. And I was just like, Peter Morin was just writing this anti-capitalist poetry, and I think it would go over like, you know, hotcakes on Instagram. So yeah.
What is interesting is I think there also is this difficulty in that Theo and I are, and our cohort are sometimes considered like the young people in the Catholic worker, and not that we're old, but we're also not that young.
Exactly. That's how people treat me too. I'm like, I'm 38. Mm-hmm. Okay, like I'm not young, but yeah, in these circles, we are considered young.
Yeah, and so we've talked about it. Theo and I have talked specifically about like, it'd be nice if there's a Catholic worker TikTok. And we're like, neither of us are going to make a Catholic worker TikTok. And our podcast was the compromise of to reach the young people.
And podcasts are awesome. I do love that. That's true. You guys are already doing it. So I love this.
But we do need to recruit someone for TikTok. That would, yes. That would be wonderful.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. For anyone who is interested in looking more at D.L. Mayfield's writings, you can go to dlmayfield.com, where you'll find her book Unruly Saint about Dorothy Day, but also her other books, The Myth of the American Dream and Assimilate or Go Home. I'm sure you're on social media platforms. How would people find you on those?
Yeah, so most of what I'm doing these days is I am writing a Substack newsletter called God is My Special Interest, and it's about the convergence of me being a late diagnosed autistic person and high control religions like white evangelicalism. Doesn't seem like it has a lot to do with Dorothy, but I promise I do write about Dorothy stuff in there because it is related, but that's kind of where I'm hanging out these days. I'm on Instagram a little bit, but for all my talk of social media, I'm trying to pull back for mental health reasons. So don't listen to what I say, maybe.
That's great. Well, again, thank you so much for being willing to join us today. We've really appreciated our conversation.
This was great. Thank you so much.
So I love the different journeys that so many people have in encountering the Catholic worker. I greatly appreciate DL being willing to be open and transparent to share with us the different turns her journey has had, first in finding Dorothy Day and her writings as sort of illuminating her own faith background and faith worldview and helping her move on or progress from some of those beliefs, but then also her willingness to share where she's at currently on her personal journey and her relationship and understanding of how she views faith and Christianity.
Yeah, and it's hard to do that, like with in a book, and just like put it all out there for people to see. It's interesting to hear more about how she feels she's changed since the project has been completed. Because I read the book and enjoyed it, having talked to her about these changes, like I think it can still all be true, everything in the book and this person's understanding of Dorothy Day or their subject at a given time can still very much mean something and have like lessons too. So it was very interesting to have just read this book a couple months ago and then be talking to DL about all of this. It's not something that happens every day.
Yeah, it's sort of the continual clarification of thought of our thoughts on something or understanding of something is always changing, which is a good thing. I think I really appreciated in particular this journey that she had from wanting to be Dorothy to being okay of being DL. And I think that is a piece of, self-actualization for anybody, of finding value in oneself, but also this important piece of being a Catholic worker, of finding out, okay, I'm not living into someone else's values. I'm not living into someone else's thoughts or perspective of the world, but like if I'm gonna do this and if I'm gonna do this for the long haul, like this has got to be me, like this has got to be something that I believe in. I can't be doing it based on what I think someone else's belief system is.
Yeah, and that's I share a lot of the same feelings with DL and had and stuff. And that's one of the difficulties with me sometimes about Dorothy Day is just that, like, people have this idea about her or something, and she really did seem to be able to communicate this vision of the Catholic worker very well and, like, lived it her whole life, which is, like, maybe the greatest miracle or testament is somebody who is able to do that specifically. But just I don't know, I guess canonization even feels like this to me, of just like in Dorothy Day into this person none of us could ever be and maybe never even existed at all, you know, who knows, the way some folks talk about it.
Yeah, and I am not Catholic, so I don't have a vested interest in canonization either way. But yeah, it does. I am curious of like what people's draw towards the Catholic worker and draw towards Dorothy, how that might change with sainthood. We definitely saw it in terms of interest on Facebook, where all of a sudden, as soon as canonization happened and Pope Francis mentioned Dorothy Day, all of a sudden people were flocking to the Catholic Worker Facebook group, not necessarily because they were interested in the Catholic Worker, right? But they were interested in Dorothy Day, not the actual worker that exists now.
Yeah, that's difficult because this is not a new phrase originating from me, but like I've heard it said, like, it's the Catholic Worker movement, it's not the Dorothy Day movement, you know? It is not and it never was like just Dorothy Day or whatever. There's always been all these people around and stuff like that. So it is like frustrating sometimes and again, not that I haven't read a lot of Dorothy Day and taken a lot of her lessons to heart and like am constantly rereading Dorothy Day, but like it is strange because to have all these people think so highly of Dorothy Day and then not be super interested in like actual Catholic workers and doing what Dorothy Day kind of sort of is doing, or at least we hope.
Yeah, Dorothy's writings, incredible, inspirational, and the movement continues. There was an interesting piece where Diehl had mentioned reading Dorothy's diaries and some of the values she found in that, which I just kind of had to smile because Mark had referenced reading Dorothy's diaries, but referenced that they were good reading for like when you're stuck in jail. So, you know, different types of writing appealing to different folks.
Yeah, that is funny. I was thinking back to we recently talked to Hope and how we were kind of teasing her about being like a Dorothy Day fangirl at such a young age and then having this conversation with DL about like, what does it mean to be like a Dorothy Day fan, kind of, you know?
Sure. Yeah. I do wish sometimes that we did. I really appreciated this conversation, both just because it was a lot of fun, but I also think it brought up a lot of good points of tension that we don't always talk about, of tension between sort of like what do we do in both like wanting to have this movement come forward and push forward, and both the ties that it has to Catholicism and Christianity, which are sort of like inextricably part of the Catholic Worker, and at the same time, it's never been just a Catholic movement, and its values and message has never been just for Catholics. And I think that's a really important like piece of tension to really explore or contemplate of if this is really to be a movement, it can't just be for Catholics. And so finding ways to tie this movement into sort of broader and broader groups, if we actually want to change society with it.
I mean, there's so many things in that statement there that could be talked about for a long time. I mean, yeah, some folks like do think that they know what the relationship to the Catholic Church is for the Catholic Worker, and it's like very strictly Catholic in a certain way. But like, I don't know, I at one point I thought that Karen House, where I was in community for a while, was like maybe the least Catholic of any Catholic worker I've been to. And maybe that's still true. And for like a lot of people, it just like they liked personalism, like vaguely, but not as like a Catholic concept. And like they just really were not interested in the Catholic Church, but they were doing amazing work, you know, and doing amazing clarification of thought for people and stuff like that. So just like, yeah, how, but some people are really opposed to that, you know, I mean, that's the difficulty, but it does exist. Some people even would like to not want to like deny it exists or something, or that they're so blasphemous that they're beyond the pale or something like that. But they called themselves Catholic workers. They were attracted to this movement. They were attracted to this tradition. They just were not attracted to the Catholic Church, you know?
Yeah, lots of room for lots more discussion and lots more podcasts, I suppose. Maybe we'll have to get two people from like opposing sides to just come on and like duke it out or something, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's, but it could be fun if you had some like friendly friends wanting to duke it out. Like, I have Catholic worker friends who are like, they're, who are more Catholic than I am, and who could have a fun time like jabbing with a also friendly, more atheist or other religion person too. Maybe we should do it.
Well, so many ideas. Yeah, so Theo, I actually have a confession to make. I have not read DL's book yet, but you have. What were some of your thoughts in reading it?
I enjoyed it. Brian Terrell shared a advanced reading copy with me when I visited him this summer. It felt very readable to me, was one thing that I really liked, and I guess that was part of DL's whole point, right, is to make it more accessible to a new generation, and I think it was, like, it would be a good pickup for folks who are not looking for something academic, not something even too over-the-top religious-y or anything like that, I would say. And I think that me and DL's image of Dorothy Day overlap a lot. So I did appreciate how she portrays Dorothy Day. Again, like the radical woman, you know, who's a menace to society and smoking a cigarette on the cover kind of thing. So I did appreciate that take on Dorothy, which I think is, you know, an accurate take in my opinion. I guess I would recommend it if anyone asked. I do think, as somebody who has read a lot of Catholic worker books, it does feel more like an intro-y thing. Like, if you've already read The Long Loneliness, if you've already read the biographies of Dorothy, like, this might not be the one for you, but like, maybe it would be a good one if you were like, I'm only gonna read one book about the Catholic worker, because it is just such, it's a good introduction.
Well, wonderful. Thanks, Theo, for your assessment of that. Well, you can find the book at dlmayfield.com. We'll put a link in there in our episode notes. This wraps up another episode of Coffee with Catholic Workers. If you want to reach out to us, send us a comment or a suggestion, you can email us at coffeewithcatholicworkers@gmail.com. We want to thank Chris from the Bloomington Catholic Worker for help editing these episodes, David Hayes for our music, and Becky McIntyre for our graphic.
Thanks for joining us again for some clarification of thought. We hope today's conversation and discussions have been enlightening, and maybe even that you're encouraged to go out and help build a world where it's easier to be good.